The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
In New Zealand, where I live, they have a saying. Whatever it is, they say, no worries. It's kind of like the way we say no problem. Something comes up, say, no worries. No worries, might. Should be right, might. No worries. And that is a nice reminder. Because worry can become a habit. It can become an unacknowledged habit, which can very much erode the happiness that we would otherwise experience in the present moment. So I'll talk a bit about worry. I'll talk about all the things that potentially could go wrong in the future, all the things that we could worry about. There's a lot of really great doom and gloom that we can go into. Just test yourself. Am I going to worry? Armageddon, zombies. Am I worried? Worried, a little bit of worry. Brains getting eaten out, zombies. No worries. But it's important to distinguish between worry as an obstacle in meditation and fear and realistic things that could go wrong in the future. I mean, the Buddha was the first and foremost in pointing that out. There it is, first noble truth, right in our face. Old age. You know, there's a lot we could worry about with old age. Old age, sickness. Don't have to be old to get sick. Death. Actually, I don't know. Death doesn't worry me so much because there'd be nothing left to worry about. But I suppose even financially it can be a big problem. Yes. If I die, what happens to when I'm gone? What would happen? Who would look after the monastery? It's easy to let worrying about the future infects the present. Because there's always something that can go wrong in the future. No matter how wonderful everything might be right here, right now, it's never so wonderful that we can't ruin it by worrying about what could go wrong in the future. And then, worry tends to be like a false friend. We think, well, if I worry about something, maybe I'll figure out a solution so that things go right, and I'll get it right in the future. And then even if everything goes just the way we want to, tomorrow, 6 months from now, next year, 10 years from now, in our retirement, everything goes just the way we want it, we still won't be able to enjoy it because we'll still be worrying about the future. So worry can't be solved by trying to get everything right. Even if everything is perfect, well, if the habit is there, we won't be able to really enjoy it. And so it steals joy. Somehow it pretends it's a friend by thinking that, by masquerading as caring, right? Masquerading as loving. Or taking responsibility, right? If I love somebody, of course I'm going to worry about them. Well, no, not really. My mother used to say that. She doesn't worry too much about me these days. But she used to, because in her mind it just went together with caring, you know, caring, loving, you know. So, well, once your mother. It's just what you do as a mother. You worry about your children. Maybe. But there's a difference. If we can separate and notice the difference between there's worry and there's love. Or there's worry and there is responsible taking care of future contingencies. But they're different. Yeah? Worry is a fear. It is a major obstacle in meditation. Mind will never really go quiet if we have that habit, if we're not able to find a way to stop that worrying mind from churning on and on. And it's very possible, necessary, responsible to make future plans. Even as a monk, they expect me to make future plans. If I agree I'm going to give a talk on Friday night, they expect me to show up. But I don't worry about it. But I used to worry. I used to worry and notice, as obstacles would come up in meditation, just noticing, well, what is it that's getting in the way of peace of mind? Huh? Noticing when the mind isn't worrying, oh, it's very peaceful. When it's not anger, it's very peaceful. Right? When we're not feeling clouded with wanting this, yeah, it's very peaceful. But when worrying is happening, what is it exactly? What dynamic is happening? Well, there's maybe a scenario, a thought, or a scenario of what could happen in the future. Usually it is a scenario that has some negative or unpleasant feeling associated with it. Right? So you get an image or a thought of what might go wrong. Sometimes a very clear one. And even if you can't think of anything that goes wrong, you think, well, maybe there's something that's going wrong that I haven't thought of. What is it? There's probably something going wrong. So there's that fear. Fear is never going to place the mind in a wholesome state. There's no way you can develop peace of mind and live in a healthy, balanced, relaxed, joyful way if our lives are dominated by fear. There are big fears, but there are a lot of small fears as well. And sometimes these small fears become so habitual. Yeah, they just become like the wallpaper. We get so used to having them around, fearing about this, fearing about that. It's all tied in with insecurity. And realistically, of course, there's a lot of things that could go wrong in the future. Yeah. Finances. We gonna have enough money in the future? People just worry about that until they die. Health, these are things that if you have health, that could disappear any time. Right? War, pestilence. End of the world. Got to mow the lawn. There's so many things that so many large or petty things that can bring up a sense of fear. And then the challenge is separating out. Okay, well, this is, even if we recognize something is stupid, that doesn't mean we can let go of it. Even if it's a stupid worry, doesn't mean we can let go of it that easily. But it is helpful to notice, this is maybe an unrealistic fear. But these are maybe realistic things that could happen. And they are worthy of paying attention to and maybe taking some action with. But how can I approach that in a way which is not going to... is going to allow me to still be happy right here and right now. So one technique that I developed was anytime a fear arose, anytime that sense of insecurity arose about the future, something that might go wrong, to visualize it and say, okay, well, what if that happens? What if that happens 100%? Absolutely, would I be able to deal with it? physical pain, mental pain, loss of comfortable situations, loss of friends, family. The lawn doesn't get mowed. Would I be able to deal with that? Would I be able to deal with the neighbor's reactions or the perceived judgments? And if you can visualize that, then visualize that. Visualize how resilient we can be as human beings. And particularly, you know, individually. I say, would I be able to deal with a situation like that if it arose? In almost every situation, we can. Even very, very difficult situations.
Yeah.
On the way back from the talk, you get into a car accident and you spend the rest of your life in a wheelchair with chronic pain. We could really worry about that. But even if it did happen, would we be able to deal with it? And the answer is yes. It's not what we would choose, maybe, but we would be fine. We would find a way to deal with that. Not just survive, but hopefully make peace with that. And if you can visualize yourself with all of these little worries that might come up, oh, yeah, if that does happen, would I still be able to be okay with that? And once I make peace with that, then the fear seems to drop away. It's like, oh, yeah, bring it on. Bring it on. I can handle it. I can take it. And you make peace with it, and then the worries drop away. One of the practical ways that I've learned not to worry too much is we have this practice of wandering called tudong, based on the Pali word tudanga, which means ascetic practice. So almost every year while I'm in New Zealand, I'll take a month and just go wandering with no money, no fixed plans, no support system set up. Just start someplace, and then I have a month to get back to the monastery somehow. And what happens in between is completely open. No fixed plans. So all I have is I have some camping gear, my alms bowl, and it's already, you know, within the first 12 to 24 hours, the question arises, am I going to get anything to eat? Where's my next meal coming from? Right? I mean, if you are prone to worry, this kind of practice would not be any fun at all. Where's my next meal coming from? Where am I going to sleep? Am I going to have a roof over my head? Do I have to sleep by the side of the road? Right? Is anyone going to give me a ride? Is it going to rain? Intentionally, it exposes us to all the things which could really go wrong. You know, the daily life basics that we take for granted so easily. Regular food, regular shelter, regular comfortable temperature. And the only way you can enjoy that type of activity, that practice, is to make peace with the fact that, okay, even if no one offers me alms food at all, I'll be all right. There are some times in the monastery where I intentionally not eat. You know, we fast. Something now, yeah, fast for a day, 2 days, 3 days. Yeah, it's actually quite good for the body. It can be quite good for assisting meditation. So then the worry starts to drop away. If I don't get anything offered after a week, well, maybe okay, I'll start to figure out a different approach. But it's never really been a worry. It always, always get something to eat. Always, there's always some place to stay. You can always sleep somewhere. Hay barns, public parks, you name it. I've slept there in New Zealand. Ajahn's sleeping around. So if we watch the mind and how the mind works, you know, moment by moment, then you really start to be able to differentiate and see how it's working. And then you can start to recognize these patterns. Right? Otherwise, they just will perpetuate themselves endlessly. They don't just go away. You have to bring awareness to them. You have to bring the light of mindfulness to be able to see how it's working. Because the if you just get the muck out of the way, the joy is there just waiting to bubble up. You know, it wants to bubble up. The joy, the freedom, sense of lightness and brightness is just, it's just like, come on, just get the muck out of the way. We're here, we're ready. Let us shine. But we like, oh, worry. Or then we might worry, well, what happens if I get too happy? I might get I might get attached to that. I might get attached. Don't want to get too much rapture happening in this meditation. I might get attached to that, and that would be an obstacle. So it's safer. It feels safer just to keep worrying. So it's worth experimenting with. Even little things. You practice with little things. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Whatever little worries come up, you know, what is it? What is it that could go wrong in the future? And say, all right, even if that happens, can I be at peace with that? Yeah, sure. But you really have to feel it. That's the thing. You really have to feel it. Am I really at peace if I don't get that? If I experience this thing that I do not want, or if I lose this thing that I really want, can I be at peace with that? So that's a very all-encompassing practice. And then we can start experiencing, you know, this freedom from worry momentarily, right? Challenge these habits if you notice it's a habit. And don't believe the idea that somehow worrying means that you care, or worrying means that you're taking responsibility. It's just fear and anxiety and insecurity maths. Just today I came from a Buddhist teacher's gathering in upstate New York. Some of the issues that were presented were conducive to worry. Yesterday, a big topic was climate change. We had various people talking about the current state and projected consequences. So the probably the most clued in presenter, the one who was very, very well researched, he said, if we continue on this particular trajectory, then civilization, as we know it, will end in 35 to 50 years. I mean, it was all very matter of fact. It wasn't like he was using scare tactics, but you know, very matter of fact. it all figured out. He was coming from the business world. And so he was saying the research in the business world was actually 5 or more years ahead of the scientific research, because they really want to know, because a lot of money is involved when changes occur, and they really need to know as clearly as possible what changes are going to occur so they can, as business people, make the adjustments so they keep making money. Right. So there, you know, with that scenario, there's a lot more details, you know, to fill it out. Mass migrations, wars, 70% of the world's population are currently living below the future level of the oceans. You know, there's a lot to worry about. So how do we make peace with something so important and yet not fall into the extremes of either, you know, consumed by worry or denial and inaction on the other hand? Right? So in the middle, there's got to be a place of, hey, this is really important. We need to take responsibility for this. This is serious. At the same time, you still want to be able to enjoy life while it's still good, you know, before everything kind of goes down the toilet. Might as well enjoy what we have left. But that's a delicate balance, isn't it? You know? I mean, it's something so potentially catastrophic, and yet at the same time, how can we approach it with a sense of clarity, resolve, but not fear-based resolve? Energy, but not energy that comes from anger. It's easy. Oh, there's so many traps to fall into. Self-righteous anger, we can get, you know, at least that motivates us, but what does that do to our clarity of mind? It destroys it. So even something like on that one particular topic, that's a real challenge. How do we approach it in a way which is not going to destroy the innate happiness and clarity of the mind? There were lots of other topics that were brought up. Topics of diversity. Are our sanghas diverse enough? We can worry about that. Do we have enough diversity in our sanghas? Ooh, we could really worry about that one. Maybe we're not inclusive enough. You know, maybe we should open it up to people who, you know, not just the Lutheran meditators, but maybe invite Protestants, I know, you know, Methodists. Do you have Luthbus here? Yeah, Luthbus? I grew up around here. I know. But that was a big topic. Worry about lack of diversity, or worry about, oh, are there unacknowledged forms of prejudice that we as white-skinned people grow up with and we don't even acknowledge? It just becomes completely normal with how we live. Things that we project, certain perceptions that we have and perpetuate that may not be a big deal to us, but may be a big deal to people of color. So sometimes things that aren't really a big worry to us actually are a big worry to other people. You know? Just because they may not have had the same privilege, same opportunities that we have had. So there are a lot of realistic worries, a lot of realistic things that could go wrong. And yet, what are our alternatives? I don't think the Buddha was a big worrier, you know. Judging from the Pali Suttas, I don't think he worried much. It wasn't like everything was perfect. Certainly not. Has your cousin ever tried to kill you? Hopefully not. The Buddha's cousin tried to kill him. Didn't seem to worry him too much. He got out of the way of the boulder just in time. If we're able to reduce the habit of worry, it not only brings joy to us, but it's going to bring a lot of joy to the people around us. Right? Now, if we're worried, what kind of mood does that put us in? Right? How does that affect our patience, our ability to be open-hearted with other people? How does that cloud our relationships with other people? Everything might be fine, but if we're really worried, then it just kind of ruins it. And then on a larger scale, the Buddha placed it in a series of proximate causes and conditions, which would eventually lead to full liberation. So towards the beginning, we have, if we live a good-hearted moral life, then we tend to have fewer worries. We tend not to be consumed with remorse over our actions. If we're very mindful and aware of how the hindrances destroy our peace of mind, and then worries will begin to cease. When worries cease, then joy and feeling, just generally feeling good about ourselves, a wholesome sense of self-esteem begins to arise, leading to a sense of tranquility in the body and the mind. You're feeling good, you're feeling okay, then the body's not so tense. And when the body is able to relax a bit, the mind can relax a bit. And we start to feel more and more happy. There's a natural sequence. It's not like we can force ourselves to be happy. You can't just say, now be happy. I want to be happy. Why aren't I happy? But there are causes that lead to happiness, and there are causes that destroy happiness. So if we start to be more wise and understanding of how this is all working, then gradually this process seems to kick in by itself. So, right, when I do this, then I start to feel more relaxed and at ease, and then happiness starts to rise more naturally, and then when I sit down to meditate, the happy mind concentrates easily. Just sit down after a couple of breaths, feel, wonderful. Nothing to worry about. Whatever worries that I had going into the meditation, I can just set them down, at least temporarily set them down, you know, for the space of a half hour, 45 minutes. Not now. Nothing to worry about. Just set it down. If we can't overcome the habit completely, then at least set it down while you're meditating. You can always pick them up again afterwards. And then when the mind, you know, is happy and it's easier to meditate, and the mind goes more peacefully, more easily, and more deeply, then of course insight arises naturally. If our minds are clouded and worrying about this and that, then we can't really see anything very clearly. This is another drawback of worrying. Even if there are legitimate problems that we need to find a solution to, worrying about it is often one of the least effective ways to solve it. But just allowing, you know, just setting it down, breathing into your heart area, just relaxing, often the solution will just become obvious or become clear. It's just going to bubble up from the surface. Because we can't, the mind can't function well if it's clouded by the hindrance of worry. It can't think clearly if it's twisted by this habit of worry. So then we start to see things as they truly are, maybe for the first time, you know, with clarity. And say, oh, now I'm starting to get a handle on something, on the situation, on why I do what I do, on this, on the people around me. Start to understand it more clearly. See things as they truly are. And that's a natural outcome of the mind going into deeper samadhi, which is a natural outcome of happiness, which is a natural outcome of feeling tranquil in the body and mind, which is a natural outcome of all these causes and conditions, including letting go of worry. And then when we see things as they truly are, then that kickstarts the whole process of insight going deeper and deeper, and we kind of break the magic spell, the evil enchantment. Become disenchanted. And then gradually we start to experience true freedom. Not the freedom of being able to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it, but right here, right now, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, whether I would wish for this or not wish for this, we can experience freedom within that. We can experience a certain peace and acceptance within that. So then, once you get a taste of real freedom, it feels so nice that you just want to keep practicing, keep putting effort. You realize that, wow, even that little bit of freedom is worth all of that work. And if that's just a small taste, wow, the complete liberation must be something very special. In Pali, the language that the Buddhist earliest teachings are recorded in, the word for freedom or liberation is vimutti. It's a synonym for nibbana or full enlightenment. So freedom from worry right here and right now, it's a very important step in that direction. So I offer this for your reflection this evening. Now, if anyone has any questions, I'm very happy to answer questions. Yes? Yes, we're so good at compounding things, aren't we? And finally, we have mindfulness about, we see the worry, we recognize that it's not for our own benefit, it's not helping. And then we can get mad at ourselves. We're there, still worrying again. There it is again. Why do I keep worrying? What's wrong with me? Well, that's just another thing to look at. You think, boy, I'm really screwed up. You know, not only do I worry and then I recognize the worry, but then I get mad at myself for worrying. And then maybe I start to worry about getting mad at myself for worrying. Maybe we should just try to simplify things. There's no magic for it. But recognizing that it's happening and just accepting, you know, at each step that we do something a bit, you know, unhelpful, just accepting it. So if we worry, we're not bad because we worry. You know, we just accept this is just a habit. Maybe We've had models in our life that we've grown up with that seem to indicate that worrying is normal. Right? So it becomes an unquestioned way of approaching things. Right? So that's fine. Okay. Whatever. We have this conditioning for whatever reason. This is the way it is. Well, it's not a problem. I mean, it is a problem. But we're not bad people because of it. It's just the way it is. Okay, fine. I can accept that. And then even if I get frustrated or angry because we can't seem to stop worrying, then okay, that's fine. Yeah, we can accept that. You know, we get frustrated at times. You know, we can accept ourselves. That's okay. We're not fully enlightened. Yeah. So at each step, you know, then just recognizing that, yeah, that's okay. You know, I accept that. In fact, it's good if we have that, if we see it. It's much worse if it's all happening, but we don't see what's going on. So if we see it, all the potentially, you know, nasty things in our own emotional life, it's okay. Hey, say, yeah. We don't have to identify with it. It's not like, hey, I am a nasty, emotionally contrived, convoluted, twisted, neurotic individual, and I'll always be this way. No, we may be all of that, but it can change. It's like I'm a twisted, neurotic individual, but hey, I'm okay with that. It will change. It's not who I really am.
We also have a second microphone, so everyone's able to hear. A community member was kind enough to donate it to the center. She was hard of hearing, so it's helpful to everyone if you use it, even if it makes you worry that you're too loud or you sound weird when you talk. Or we all think we sound weird when we talk, so it's fine. Just hold up your hand and I'll give it to you.
Hello, I'm Kyle. This might open up a whole can of worms, but it's appropriate, this talk today for me. I spent most of today worried about taking medication for my worry. I've developed some bad habits over the years and have been on some medication and recently went off and decided to go back on again because of excessive amounts of worry. And then read an article today that said something in regards to, just explained all the residual effects it can have on the brain and everything else, and I started panicking until now. So, any thoughts on that?
Sometimes the obstacles in our mind are subtle, and sometimes they're not subtle at all. Yeah. So you need to find the appropriate tools or skillful means that meets it on the right level. So subtle techniques are just going to be blown over if the habit of worrying is like really strong, right? Like panic attacks, anxiety, you know, is really strong. Then you may need to develop other ways of approaching it, including medication. Right? Those are individual decisions we have to make. There are cases where proper medication in balance can bring the mind to a place where it can actually, for the first time, get a handle on worry and start feeling like you're really practicing the Dhamma for the first time.
Yeah, I've had a lot of struggles with being a good practitioner and being on medication. It's a thing.
Yeah. Again, there's individual case-by-case basis. What are you worried about?
Well, specifically, I started on the medication for anxiety and then read something to the effect that it has an effect to cause chronic depression after long-term use.
Right.
And when I went off the medication, I experienced depression for the first time in my life. And so then I read this article and then it's like, oh God, it's happening.
Right.
So worried about that.
Right. And admittedly, depression is one of those things that's very difficult just to be at peace with. Just because of its very nature, by definition, it's like, I mean, to a certain degree, we can think, well, I mean, all of us get depressed to some degree at some times. And we can visualize, well, even if I get depressed based on whatever causes and conditions lead to that, can I still be okay with that? You know, there are times where I get down, but I know it's going to change. Now, and that's a relief. I mean, that is a reminder that things will change. So even when things look depressing and you feel depressed, then that is not a permanent state. It can feel like it's always going to be that way. But it will pass. Can you approach the decision in a way that is not based on worry, but just based on, okay, well, here are the, I mean, I don't like to go into pros and cons, a list of pros and cons, because that's often not as accurate as just sitting quietly to whatever degree we can and just feeling what seems to be the right thing to do and then trusting that. Trust your intuition. And be willing to make mistakes. Try something. Oh, that didn't work. No problem. We had the courage to try it. Try something different. And it may not be as subtle as just watching the moment-by-moment complexities of the mind. If you find that going out canoeing, you know, releases the mind from worrying, at least temporarily, and then find skillful means to do that. Just know, you have to experiment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always on. Okay. Great. Yeah. That this is all very interesting and it's very relevant. Are you saying that one way to deal effectively with worry and anxiety, develop your meditation skills? That's one thing. And the second thing is, as much as you can, try to be aware of how you're thinking, as you say, what the patterns are in your mind. Is that what?
Yes, that is one very skillful way of trying to understand where worry comes from. Yeah. How does it arise? It doesn't just arise from nothing. You know, there has to be some habit pattern that's going on, certain causes that lead, you know, to the mind being either consumed by a big worry or just have these niggling worries happening all the time. Yeah. So if meditation is going well, then mindful awareness becomes stronger and stronger, and we start to notice these things more. They may be going on all the time, or regular habits that arise for a long time, but we may never have noticed them before. It doesn't mean they're not there. So developing the meditation then brings us to the stage where we have the tools, we have the mental capability to see it more clearly. And then especially if we direct that clear awareness, not just to the breath, but to understanding the moment-by-moment workings of the mind.
Yeah, that's very... I'm just wondering. I've been listening to these dharmas very much, and I wonder why the mind plays tricks on itself.
Yeah, it's kind of insidious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Through evolution, we'd learn how to think in a way which is actually beneficial.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
I feel like I'm not a heavy worrier. In fact, sometimes I feel like I should worry more than I do. But one of my favorite times to worry is when I'm going to bed at night and maybe reflecting on the day, and I have a 5-year-old daughter, and I'll suddenly make up this like scenario where, you know, she's being killed, or she's just learned how to really do the monkey bars, and like just some horrible, like, you know, she falls and just cracks her neck, you know, like this comes in like, and of course, you know, I'll catch it and just say, well, you know, that was an interesting story, Nancy, you know, but I've also started doing a kind of an antidote where whatever came up, that I'll make up another story, which, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is skillful, but I'll just picture her, you know, doing something, you know, with skill and realizing, you know, or seeing something positive, like, and actually making that up. And I don't know, I've just noticed that it actually helps me. It's like, you know, the neurotic tendency is to make up horrible scenarios. So I'll make myself make up a really positive scenario. Is that a good idea, or am I just like then making up something else?
Or are we just perpetuating our delusion? Yeah. Compounding it. No, there are many forms of skillful means, and the Buddha taught a wide, wide range of solving problems. And creating visualizations in that way is a very effective way of doing that. Yeah, a very valid way of approaching that. You have to just look at the results. Bottom line is what works. Right? If it brings the mind to a point of balance, you know, if the mind is out of balance with, you know, an image like a horrible image of your child cracking its neck, falling from the monkey bars, is something that can bring up some anxiety. And so then you balance it out with something more, I mean, that is possible, but probably what is more realistic is that they'll just have a lot of fun. and you balance that out, and then it's like that helps to neutralize it and allow you to set it down. Right? If that works, then that's great. Particularly with parents or anything that we care about very much, worries can be very persistent or intense, or, you know, worries can be very passionate. That's why it gets confused with love. Because when we love something very strongly and we really want the future to go in a particular way, hopefully a future that doesn't involve my child breaking its neck, then that is a strong desire, and then we can be worried about our desires not being fulfilled in the future. Worried that we will get something that we don't want. And so that's why the worry and the love and the future projections all become conflated. So separating that out saying, yes, I absolutely love my child. Yes, I do wish for them to have a happy future. And yes, it is possible that something might go wrong, but on most days, everything will be just fine. And then the worry arises, and you're able to separate that out. And you say, okay, well, I can actually take this part out. This is not needed in that scenario. It doesn't help. It just makes it worse. But you have to be very patient with yourself. The habit is usually very deep. And so you may have to do that hundreds, thousands of times before it really sinks in. But gradually it does. And it sounds like if you're not already a big worrier, then good for you. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that could go wrong in my life. But somehow, I don't know, I don't feel irresponsible by not worrying about them. Anybody else?
Is there a perspective that what if there's a habit that isn't going to change? So I know he brought up depression, but there's other circumstances for human beings that may not change in their lifetime. So what is a perspective, at least from the Buddhist mindset, or maybe just your own opinion on how to skillfully handle that? If there's just a condition that's, because you can't assume, I guess, everything's going to change, right? So,
well, things will change, but maybe not drastically. Sometimes the change is subtle, but things do change, things shift, things modify. Yeah. Did you have a specific example?
No, I just had a question to that perspective. That,
because that's one of the aspects of delusion, how mm-hmm. the Buddha defined delusion as one of the root defilements, is giving something or projecting permanence on something.
But isn't it delusional to assume that something will change as well? Because let's say someone deals with a disformity, either in their mind, they're born with a brain, you know, something, their brain doesn't work right, or they have some type of handicap, or just affecting a part of their brain where emotionally they don't have the same capacity as someone else. So there's an expectation, whether through society or through some other means, that they can modify that, and that they hold on to this hope that this will change, but maybe it won't. And isn't that equally delusional?
Well, there's a certain parameter around how much things can realistically change, admittedly, you know? This morning on the train, I was speaking with a man who works with autistic children. You know, if a child is born autistic, there's a lot that can be done, but there are limits, right? And so, yeah, of course, there are limits. So it would be delusional to expect too much. You have to be realistic, right? If I'm born in this body, but I really want a different body, well, actually, these days, you can't. Sorry. I guess that's kind of an outdated example. Whatever body you have, yeah, you can change. You can change it pretty drastically now. But it doesn't mean that things are permanent in the sense of completely unchanging. But there are parameters around it, of course.
So you were talking about when you're having fear, asking yourself about, you know, can I be at peace with that? And what if you can't?
What if you can't be at peace with it? Just worry about it. Well, So if you have a future scenario, something that we don't want to happen in the future. Yeah? You think, if that happens, I won't be able to deal with it. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean you will be depressed, unhappy, commit suicide? Specifically, like, what does that mean? And how long would that last?
I don't know. It's a little too scary to think about.
And we have our limits of how open we can be to certain things as well. And that's okay to respect that limit. We don't want to overwhelm ourselves. But recognizing that, you know, just getting to the point where you can recognize that there are some things that would be very difficult to make peace with. Certainly. I mean, I'm not saying it. If it was me who got in the car accident on the way back from the talk tonight and had intense chronic pain for the rest of my life, I'm not saying I would be very quick to make peace with that. Maybe that would take a while. But somehow, just observing human beings, they're so resilient. We are so resilient, that even in the face of tremendous situations, you know, very unpleasant situations, people have the possibility. You know, they will survive. We can survive. At least don't set your bar too high. That's another one. It's not like we may not be blissful, but it can be okay. I don't know. My sense is that almost everyone has that inner strength, even if they don't recognize it. Often we don't realize how much inner strength we have until we're tested and we need it to come forth.
So working off of some of the examples that you just spoke of,
hold the mic closer.
Absolutely, there are limitations that we have in the world. But isn't there a way to balance the infinite possibilities of the universe with the limits that we stand in today? Working off of your example of autism, for example, there was a time in our experience where no one thought anything could be done with autistic persons, and they were largely throwaways. And now they're integrated in classrooms and main life, and they have expanded what before we thought were limitations that could never be overcome. And I can think of many examples, like the story of the bat boy who clicked the whole time but was born blind and could move through the world as though he could see. We don't know what the possibilities of the universe are. Boy, would we like to. I would. But we also are faced with the limitations that are before us and often sometimes cause us worries. So is there not some way to balance the two?
Sorry, what was the last part of your question?
How do we balance the two, the limitations that we stand in today and mm-hmm. have before us with what we know we don't know in terms of the infinite possibilities of the universe?
Well, I think that can be a very helpful way not to worry too much. Right? Recognizing that even if we perceive limitations at this point, in the future, maybe those limitations will be greatly expanded. Maybe those limitations will disappear. Not thinking that these perceived limitations are permanent, or who we really are. You know, whether if they're perceived internal limitations.
I don't like mics. One thing I've noticed for myself about worry is that really it locks in the body. I've recently had an experience of taking on my son's supreme anxiety, kind of depression about his inability to do school. And I really took it in, and I started to notice, whoa, I'm getting depressed here. And I just had to sort of expel it with a movement of energy and a taking in of breath. And I realized that in managing my anxiety, that the body is so integral, and that the breathing work we do is like supremely the best tool in the world to like give ourselves grounding and pleasure with nothing, with really just breathing. And seeing people, you know, like leaving the planet, they just if you can just breathe, you know, it's a key to sort of, it's a key. And so for myself, I realize it's not even the worry. It's the supreme unpleasantness of being around somebody who is suffering. It's very unpleasant. And if I could keep my own equanimity more around it, I wouldn't have to flee from it, because a 15-year-old is going to have to learn how to manage himself and succeed at what he wants to succeed at. And I can help sort of change his expectations and find different ways to look at things, but I can't do it for him. And I don't know if you have any advice about how to transform unpleasantness into, I guess that's a version, into into something I can live with. That'd be good.
Well, the first point that you brought up about bringing awareness into the body is a very good one, because especially with mental states such as repetitive stress, worry, they can easily, I mean, with each moment of that, you can tighten a muscle here, tighten a muscle here. Before we know it, our posture starts to change. You know, we just start kind of shrinking. Right? And it's not always that easy to have enough mindfulness to keep pace with how the mind's working, because it can be so quick, so fickle, and our reactions just come up so quick and so powerfully that it overwhelms mindfulness. But somehow being in the body, it's like you can feel it, and often that is a good doorway. Yeah. We may have no idea that there's fear going on in our minds, but we're kind of feeling our whole body and realize, wow, there's a bit of a knot there. And then we check our minds, oh, wow, I'm worried about something. I didn't even notice that, right? So regularly maintaining awareness with all the sensations in the body, catching it before it becomes too chronic, or the things that are deeply held or have become, you know, part of the way we hold our body, you know, just through repetition, we can start to unlock that. You know, it doesn't happen. It's not solved just like that. But for one moment, we may release tension and say, oh, wow, suddenly, well, my posture changed. It wasn't like I'm forcing it. It's just like a release of tension simply by bringing clear awareness to a specific area of our body and recognizing where we are holding tension in our body. Then, because the body and mind mirror each other so much, the corresponding tension in the mind dissipates. So that is a very it's a very practical way of dealing with it. And it's very good because it can get us out of our heads. Yeah? If we feel like we're worrying a lot, we're already pretty cerebral, and then we're trying to solve it by looking at the mind and analyzing the mind, it seems like everything's happening from here up. We're just bringing all the awareness into a full body consciousness, just aware of all the sensations in the body. It's constantly changing. You know, maybe relax 1 minute, and then you're taking a deep breath and be aware of everything and notice, oh, wow, suddenly there's something coming up here or there. And the great thing about that form of practice is that you don't have to know every detail about where it came from in the mind. You know there's tightness here, bring awareness to it, kind of dissipates, and you just trust. You know that whatever was bringing that up, you know, is no longer an issue. Or you may have, but then it may come up again. You know, a few seconds later, come up again. You have to persistently, patiently stay with it. But a lot can be achieved on a nonverbal level. Analytical, intellectual clarity, analysis, it has its place, but it has its limits too. A lot of the things that were conditioned maybe before we were forming words, you know, in our early stages of formation, early years of formation, there was a lot that came in on a pre-verbal level, and the only way to access it is in a non-verbal way. So something as simple as mindfulness of breathing. You think, well, how can something so simple really be that profound? But it can reach very deeply. It can reach beyond where the mind can analyze, beyond where we can be consciously aware. So those things then do work below the surface. Staying very much in your body can be a good way to stay grounded. And then you notice, oh, I can still be relaxed even with a 15-year-old. And if that doesn't work, you just go canoeing.
Time for one or two more people. Anybody else?
I recently set out to meditate for 100 days straight, and I made it 28
days. Like without moving?
Yeah. No. Just every day, every evening.
I applaud your resolution. Yeah.
I made it 28 days, and then...
And then finally...
I fell
the
off
discomfort
the
arose in your knee. Huh? Yes. You say, well, yeah, okay, I'll shift posture and start counting over again. Yeah.
So
it's good to have a high standard. Yeah.
Anyway, so I feel like it's been a bit of a struggle to start back up again because I feel like the bar has been set, the watermark has been set, and I kind of feel a little bit of a pressure or a weight to, I guess almost a fear, to go beyond where I was before and make it to the 100 days. And I guess I was wondering if you could speak to resolving the fear of starting again.
Right, you can get quite worried about, can we go beyond 28 days now. Well, ask yourself why you set those limitations. right? Why did you set those goals for yourself? How do you relate to goals? If the goals are starting to give rise to stress and anxiety, then maybe it's better not to have the goals. Sometimes it's helpful to set goals because it can push us further than we would go. You know, it can be conducive to motivation. But also beware of pushing ourselves too hard. Be aware of not being kind to yourself. If we set a goal that's too high and then we don't reach it, how does that feel? You know? You feel terrible about yourself? You feel like, well, I'm not good enough. Jeez. So how we relate to setting a goal like that is probably even more important than whether you achieve sitting meditation 100 days in a row. What can you learn along the way? So if you make it to 28 days, that's fine. That's not a failure. If you learn something, well, why did you stop? I mean, maybe there's a good reason why you didn't meditate on that day. You know, there's probably a lot of very valid reasons. Or maybe you're just lazy. But whatever. You know? But whatever. There's something that we can learn about ourselves. And then say, well, that's fine. Good. Learned that, saw that, see that, I accept that, and start again. Whether you want to count the days or not.
Thank you.
Probably getting close to the last one. So.
Here, I didn't have a chance. Yeah, it seems to me that we have to think about the future, and so it's and I tend to worry also. Can you talk about how to think about the future without worrying? So, for example, you took the example of global warming. Mm-hmm. You have to make scenarios and anticipate, you know, what's going to happen with the current projections, and then if we take this kind of action, maybe it's going to get us to that. And then make decisions, but that's very. So you have. It seems to me I have to do some kind of worrying to see what's acceptable or what's not acceptable or what's good.
Yeah, well, this is what I meant by. Of course, we have to think about the future. Unless you're wandering on Tudong with a Buddhist monk, then you don't have to think about the future too much. You just think it'll take one day at a time. But even me, when I get back to the monastery, people expect me to have a schedule of events. So I have to think about the future and taking responsibility for things in our life. You know, we have to think about the future. But how to take responsibility but not add in that factor of fear and worry to it. Right? Yes, obviously there are a whole range of things that can go wrong in the future. Things that we don't want. And a lot of things will happen that we don't want to happen. That's just realistic. Sometimes there are steps we can take right here and right now that will make a difference. Sometimes there's not. And so that's helpful to separate out. But either way, worrying just makes it worse. Doesn't mean we can immediately stop, but at least we can see, oh, there it is again, right? And that's the first step to recognizing, oh, this is not helping the process. It doesn't help me plan better. It doesn't help me think more clearly. It doesn't help me be happy here and now, even when everything is fine. I mean, something like global warming, if we don't do something here and now, then there's going to be a lot of serious problems in the future. Right? It is important to figure out how to take action with a proper state of mind.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.